This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more, this is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, NIL Game Changers, and Sunbury Motor Company. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And the opening half hour brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports Domestics Microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and out every day. Six great flavors of slushies in the pickle bar, led by my two personal favorites, the barrels and the dills. Indeed, second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. We open up the show in a big way by bringing in Ryan Snyder on 3.com, Blue White Illustrated. First of all, how are you and your family doing?
Doing well, Steve. Been a little while. It's always a hectic 6 weeks, you know, trying to be a dad in June when school's out and also cover recruiting, which is insane in the month of June and into July. But I'm not complaining, right? I got a cool job. So doing well. Can't complain, man.
I will get to the recruiting part in a moment. You closely follow television. What kind of quandary has it been for Penn State with a whiteout game in conjunction with the networks?
Yeah, this has been a popular topic lately, right? And, I mean, I feel like it's been a popular topic for a couple years now, but man, James and you know, even Pat Kraft have been kind of outspoken in some interviews we've done with them recently about, you know, how the Big Ten could maybe help Penn State out a little bit when it comes to, you know, having big time games in the evening, you know, when they want their whiteout. So, you know, we don't really know officially when Ohio State will be, but I think everybody kind of understands that that'll probably be penciled in for noon. And, you know, between UCLA and Washington, again, we don't really know those times officially yet, but the fact that people have been kind of outspoken about it kind of leads you to believe that maybe they aren't going to be night games. Or at least with UCLA, we'll see Washington's late in the year. Who knows, you know, with those November games. But, it's been interesting, man, because this is not something that Penn State wants. But, you know, at the same time, all of these Big Ten schools, except for the new ones, of course, are getting paid out pretty handsomely. And hey, look, if you look at Big Noon's ratings, they've been pretty solid. So it's going to be interesting. I think Penn State certainly wants the Big Ten and Fox and NBC and CBS to kind of work with them a little bit more moving forward. But, you know, when it comes to this year specifically, I'm not sure exactly what all they can do.
Yeah, it should be pointed out that of the top 15 rated college football games last season, seven of them took place in the noon hour. So, I mean, so that's the Fox point of view. The Penn State point of view is they're number six in total viewership from 2016 to 2023, and they happen to be one of the 18 schools that make up 50% of the TV ratings. So both sides have an argument.
Right. And that's why we're out of quandary.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting, man. I think I could see a route down the road where maybe the networks will work with them a little bit. I mean, the whiteout is still absolutely a desired telecast. But, you know, if you want that to be Ohio State, if you want that to be Michigan, you know, even maybe an Oregon or some other team that's very prominent, USC, of course, now. Look, Fox is always going to have the opportunity to take those games very early. Just the way this draft works and all types of little details that we could spend all day about. You know, I don't know if it's going to come down to Fox kind of putting his tail between his legs and letting NBC, you know, jump the line for one of those games. We saw that this year. I mean, that's been kind of announced already publicly that, you know, Fox kind of gave NBC an opportunity to move up a little bit in the draft while they got, you know, later games. You know, I think Fox got two out of that. It was like a two-for-one kind of trade with NBC. Maybe we see something like that moving forward. Maybe we see the Big Ten kind of give a little bit there with Penn State. Of course, the Michigan, Ohio State, and that game always being at noon is what Franklin kind of keeps pointing to. So we will see. But right now, I feel like that's a fix that they could maybe make in 2025, 2026, something that can be negotiated or talked about here in the next, you know, coming months. But for this season, I kind of just feel like it's a little too late for much to change. I mean, the draft's already been done, and, you know, Penn State has to figure out what game. I mean, there's a reason Penn State hasn't announced their whiteout yet or any of their, you know, their themes for this year. And I think a lot of it comes down to they know that they don't have a lot of great options for what they really want. And we'll see if that comes soon. I know they want to get that out soon, but there's a reason they've been taking a little while to put it out there.
I want to ask you one more TV question, then I'll get to the recruiting part. Everyone talks about realignment. We know about Florida State and how vocal they've been about they need to leave the ACC and so forth. In reality, Ryan, how much TV money is actually left out there? Because contracts are already signed, and it's not a bottomless pit of money across the board. I mean, doesn't common sense enter into this argument at some point? Because there seems to be a lot of emotion and no common sense.
For sure. Absolutely. I think that's a great point. I mean, look, let's be honest. I mean, there was a lot of talk that Fox wanted in on the 12-team college playoff. Why didn't they get in? It's not really been out there too much publicly, but I think it's a lot had to do with the fact that they added a couple schools to the Big Ten, and money is tight. And you know, we've already seen what ESPN's had to do in different ways and cut to, you know, cut staff or whatever it may be in different ways to be able to pay out those television contracts that, you know, don't get me wrong, the NBA is going to get more. The NBA is about to be up. I think there's one other, it's not NFL, NHL's good. I think the NBA is the other big one that's coming up there as far as ESPN.
They're going to, in essence, they're going to double the number from 1.4 to 2.8 billion per year. Because for ESPN, there's a nice to have and there's a must have. Well, the NBA is a must have, so they had to pay for it.
For sure. And I mean, look, there's I have a question, Steve. Has the 14-team playoff been worked out? Like, is that all still with ESPN or is it just the 12-team? Have they figured out the college football playoff will be with ESPN 14 through like 2030s? Did I miss that?
Now that part's been worked out. Now whether it gets to 14 or not, I think they're still debating it. But the long-term contract's been worked out with ESPN, and they in turn are going to farm out two of the games in the 12-team playoff to TNT.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, look, unless if Turner decides they want to really get in on some of this college football action, maybe they do. We'll see. Obviously, right now they only have two college football playoff games. But, no, the money is a great point. I don't really see, you know, we'll see what happens with the ACC and all that. But ESPN, you know, usually it's the, at least for like the Big Ten, the SEC, it was the television companies kind of in their corner to some degree to do this realignment. Well, What reason does ESPN have to do that? They have one of the sweetest deals ever with prominent schools like Clemson and Florida State and North Carolina and some others. And, you know, that's the difference between the ACC situation and the SEC Big Ten situation is, man, because that's such a long contract, there's nobody really in their corner to back them up. And maybe Florida State and Clemson can throw a hand grenade in there and blow it all up. But until that happens, that just the ball just isn't really in their court, if that makes sense.
All right, so we all know that June is such an active time recruiting-wise. You have on-campus visits all over the place. Penn State's been reeling in players, not just getting commitments for the upcoming year, but even a year beyond that. What's been your take as to how Penn State has handled it, and what's the positional balance that they have with what they've done?
Yeah, I mean, positionally wise, they're pretty well set as far as the balance goes. They need to add maybe a couple receivers. We'll love to get a defensive lineman in there. You know, they're shooting really high for a top linebacker like Ty Jackson, you know, down in Georgia. We'll see, you know, where that goes. But for the most part, the class is pretty much set. You know, multiple corners, two safeties. You know, I can go through the list. Maybe they would have liked to have got another offensive lineman, but you know, Phil Troutwine has also pulled in some quality guys in recent years, and you know, I don't think he's just going to take someone to take someone, you know, if that makes sense when it comes to offensive tackle moving forward. So from that perspective, it's been good. You know, they've really done a good job nationally too. That's maybe the big difference between what we've seen kind of in recent years and this year. Two guys out of California. One, of course, is a LeVar's kid, so I don't know how much we want to include that as far as like a true California commitment, but Darius Dixon, of course, plays at Modern Day. Troy Hune, who you alluded to, really good 2026 quarterback prospect, a top 100 player out of Mission Hills, which is closer to San Diego. So yeah, you're seeing those. You know, they got a kid out of Kansas. I don't know when the last time Penn State got a player out of Kansas, but Jaden Woods, really good defensive end. We'll see where things progress there. But I think it kind of speaks to the growth of their recruiting staff over the last couple of years and the work that they're able to put in as far as developing those relationships with coaches at different schools, building up that trust over a couple of years. So then when, you know, you do have top players emerge, well, hey, man, you know, they've got a really good relationship with Kenny Sanders or Alan Zimaitis or, you know, all these recruiting staff guys. And, of course, that kind of snowballs into the coaching staff as well. So I think that's kind of the biggest takeaway for what we've seen here in recent weeks, is really just kind of the spreading of their wings and being able to pull off some of those guys that, you know, maybe 4, 5, 6 years ago felt very unlikely. And even to some degree, I mean, shoot, Darius Dixon committing from Modern Day, like, that was one of those ones where it surprised me pretty much right until the moment it happened.
Right. Everything goes in cycles. So there are some years where Pennsylvania has some decent depth in it, and you need to mine the talent. There are other years where it's a bit shallow, so you have to go other places to find it. Where is Pennsylvania in this particular cycle?
I think it's about mid-range. What I would say about PA is the top's been pretty good. And the issue that I think a lot of fans would point to is that a lot of the top guys ended up elsewhere. Matt Zollers is a really good quarterback out of Springford. We have him as a five-star. He ended up at Missouri. Zahir Mathis, Michael Carroll, Andrew Olish, you know, three really good players. Mathis is an edge rusher. Carroll's an O-lineman. Olish is a tight end. You know, they've all picked other schools. What's interesting, first off, we've seen this happen before. If you go back to that 2021 class, you know, Nolan Rucci goes to Wisconsin, McCord and Marvin Harrison go to Ohio State. Like, this does happen every handful of years. And there's a lot of different things you can point to. You know, sometimes, you know, just the class has a lot of players that, you know, for one reason or another, want to spread their wings. They want to go elsewhere.
Right.
I think what we're kind of seeing a little bit this year, too, though, is the impact of NIL and just how much it is giving guys a reason to think or want to maybe go elsewhere. Penn State's NIL is okay. It's gotten a lot better, and it's fine. I don't want to make it out to be like it's terrible, because I think a lot of people made it out to be terrible. It's not. But when you have a guy like Matt Zollers, who's an incredible quarterback, well, look, everybody, if you follow this closely, Missouri's NIL collective is one of the best out there now, and it's very well organized, and the way they go about different things, like, they have the resources to really make an impression. I think that was part of Zollers' decision to go there. You know, same with Michael Carroll going to Alabama. You know, there's a lot of different guys that, man, if you really look at the top 100 recruits or so in the country, NIL is having a massive impact on them. And then we're seeing in some ways that benefited, you know, maybe not the top-tier Georgias and Alabamas, and then some years it kind of helps those kind of schools. And I feel like we're kind of seeing that circle back this year with some of these prominent guys, at least in our region, you know, circling down to some of those SEC schools or some bigger schools that have been very outspoken about the fact that they are going to be incredibly aggressive from an NIL and recruiting perspective. So, you know, the good thing for Penn State is they got 4 or 5 months to try and flip some of these guys, too. I don't know about the PA guys too much. They seem pretty firm. But there's certainly some guys in Maryland who have ended up elsewhere that I know they really like, and, you know, they'll continue to chip away at that. But I think Penn State fans, you know, it's funny. I'm going on a tangent real quick. The whole dominate the state conversation, right? I mean, remember, that was 10 years ago. Like, so much has changed since then, and just not just from NIL, but just in the way recruiting staffs are built and how big these staffs are. There is a part of me that feels like fans probably put too much stock into that comment nowadays. They want to point to it when they want to point fingers and do this and that. But, you know, at the end of the day, as long as you're getting talent, which Penn State's doing a fine job with, they're pretty much on pace to finish where they've always finished, at least in recent years, you know, 10 or probably 12, 15 kind of range. As long as you're stacking talent, I don't know how much it really matters that it's from your home state. It's great when it is, right? And fans get excited about that, and they can go watch those guys on Friday nights and watch their careers and all that. But, you know, they're also pulling guys from Arkansas, Florida, California, and all these other places that, you know, 6, 7, 8 years ago, that wasn't always the case. So just keep bringing in talent, keep developing guys. I think at the end of the day, they'll be just fine.
Yeah, every time Drew Aller throws the ball out of the backfield to Catron Allen or tosses one to Trey Wallace, wouldn't get too worked up. All right? None of them are Pennsylvania guys. Okay, Tyler Warren, not a PA guy. I don't worry about that part, because when James made that statement, Penn State is in the throes of sanctions at that moment. Mm-hmm. Right? You have to have context to what things mean along the way. So, you know,
right.
And go from there. When you look at the number of guys that they have, and the fact they pushed back this early signing thing to now after the last regular season game, why is it that the SEC, along with the Southern high school coaches, don't want it pushed back to, like, say, June 30th, for example? Why don't they? Because they're that. Because those are the two roadblocks because college basketball has made it work forever.
It's a great question. I've been trying to dig on that. I don't know if you've been able to dig on that. I'm trying to understand it more. I don't know if it has much to do with, you know, the schools kind of start. Well, no, because if it's in June, like, I would understand if it was maybe late July, because that's
okay,
down south. They do start a little earlier. But
sure.
June, I don't understand it at all. And there's got to be some sort of reason. I think maybe to some degree it's because the SEC knows, or at least for the most part, that those schools have more financial backing than others, so maybe they want to flip guys. And they see it as like, look, we have resources here that can probably allow us to get top players committed elsewhere that other schools who don't have those resources currently hold commitments from. But that's a lazy excuse, though, and a lazy way to look at it. I'm sure there's things I'm not thinking about. Where, you know, some of the more northern schools are not, we're not even talking Penn State, Michigan, Ohio State, but, you know, the Purdue's, the Indiana's, all those kind of schools of the world, you know, they're looking for those late bloomers senior year. So, you know, they're filling in guys that maybe we're not talking about, we're not thinking about right now, and maybe those SEC schools can pull off talented players off the top of those classes, right? The guys that are kind of marquee. Mm-hmm. Other than that, I don't get it. I don't understand it at all. I've always been in favor of a June signing period, or just any sort of summer signing period, because
I agree.
Again, Penn State has 22 commits right now. Like, the fact that they got to babysit these guys now for however many months and worry about this or that or visit here and there, it doesn't really help the recruit because it kind of fills their brains sometimes and their families with too many thoughts they overthink it, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And then, you know, just the amount of work that the recruiting staff and all the coaches have to put in, you know, not really visiting guys, but maybe going out and watching high school games, things like that. It just doesn't. I don't understand the benefit of it in 2024. I understood it a little. I would have understood it way more in 2014 and other times where, you know, staffs just weren't as big and different things like that. But nowadays, it makes no sense.
Once the House settlement is approved by Judge Claudia Wilken, Penn State is going to be one of those that will pay the $22 million total, and however they want to dole it out. And that's going to be the loan number in all this. It's going to go up at some point. But not every school can afford to do that. You and I both know that. I mean, in the Big 12 and in the ACC, you're going to tell me they can afford to find $22 million? How interested are you on the domino as to what that can mean in recruiting?
You know, I'm torn on that, Steve, because I agree with everything you just said there. Like, it doesn't make sense on paper. For like a school like Maryland, for example, yeah, what was their profit last year? Like $80 million, or maybe where Penn State was like 120 or something like that. Like there's a big, right. Maybe not even 80 for Maryland. That actually be lower than that. But at the same time, you know, and if you are committed to being a big time football school,
right.
Like how do you not do that? Because here's the deal: is collectives aren't going away.
Right.
So if you don't commit to that $22 million. You're putting yourself in a bigger hole, in my opinion. It's going to be even tougher than it is right now to compete against some of the big dogs out there.
That's right.
So I'm torn on it, Steve. Like I think what you're saying is right. Like no way all of those schools will pay all $22 million, but I don't understand how 90% of them don't, especially if you're in the Big Ten or the SEC. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that won't. No. I guess with Big 12 ACC, it's a little different with their television contracts.
I'm interested to see which sports end up going to club sports at some of those schools in order to curb costs to do exactly what we just talked about. I think that's at least a scenario to consider.
For sure. Yeah. For sure. I don't know if Penn State will ever get to that point, but the money is substantial. And, you know, a school like Penn State would never want to do that. But the money's incredible. I mean, but, like, the one thing I keep telling fans is, like, if you think that this change is going to fix everything, I don't see that happening. Because, look, at the end of the day, Maryland now can spend $22 million, potentially.
That's right.
Rutgers can do that. Like, it just makes the pot deeper. It doesn't really widen the gap, in my opinion, or make a Penn State higher up on the chain. Maybe it will. Maybe I'll be wrong, and a lot of these schools will pay, you know, only have $10, $15 million to put into that stuff. But I just don't understand that with all this conference realignment and the schools wanting to be basically in these big three, of course, big four with the ACC, but, you know, we'll see what happens there. Like, if you're fully committed to that and you've positioned your school to be in that position, anything less than $22 million, if I'm the coaching staff or recruiting staff or anything like that, that would really frustrate me and not be a winning strategy.
Always a winning strategy to have you on. Thanks so much. Really appreciate it, Ryan. Thanks for the time.
No problem, Steve. Last batch at the end of the month. Reach out then.
Ryan Snyder, and we will reach out at the end of the month for Lash Bash. From On3.com, Blue White Illustrated. This half hour brought to you by our great friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and out every day. Pickle Bar, led by the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket, here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The beverage supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
Hi, this is Season. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855. Visit our website at purdyinsurance.com or check us out on Facebook to see what we can do for you.
Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And this half hour brought to you by NIL Game Changers, the ultimate destination for name, image, and likeness opportunities for both athletes and businesses. Visit NILGameChangers.org to start your journey. All right. Thanks to Ryan Snyder, Audrey Snyder in the final half hour, not related. And the Big 12 Media Days have been going on in Las Vegas. And that's an area where Brett Yormark wants to make an impact, because now there are vacancies sports-wise in Las Vegas because the Pac-12 no longer can get a spot in the Las Vegas Bowl. I mean, when that contract runs out. There's also a Pac-12 tournament, basketball tournament, that was taking place at T-Mobile Arena. where Mark probably wants to get there. I mean, look, this, he's aggressive, but he's also, before people start thinking about he's operating from a position of strength, which he projects, he's not. Now, he's projecting a position of strength, which is his job, by the way. So I respect and admire what he's doing with it. But he's going to have to find more money someplace, because they may be number three in revenue, but they're way behind. And they don't have the brands that can close the gap. And when we talk about the 18 schools that make up 50% of the TV ratings, which ones are in his conference? None. There is not a single Big 12 school among the 18 that make up 50% of the TV ratings. We talked about from 2016 to 2023 viewership. Viewership. And Penn State is number six in total viewership over that time span. Ohio State's number one, by the way, in case you're wondering. There are no Big 12 schools in the top 15. I mean, I'm talking about the current crop. Texas is in there, Oklahoma's in there, but there's nobody else. People are not clamoring, whether it's right or wrong. I mean, it's there's no such thing as right or wrong on this. In other words, you as a consumer of the product make the decision about what you would like to watch. Well, consumers have not been making the overwhelming, hey, I can't wait to watch that Iowa State-Kansas State football game, as opposed to, I can't wait for Alabama to play Georgia. I can't wait for Penn State to play Ohio State. And that's the issue he has within his conference. So he is brash. He's a wheeler dealer. He has done everything he can to keep his conference alive. Remember, 3 years ago, and Bob Bowlesby has to also get some credit for this. Remember, 3 years ago, this month, the Big 12 was thought to be dead in the water. Texas and Oklahoma were leaving. So the swirl then began. Where could the other eight go? Because the Big 12 was only 10 schools at the time. Where could the other eight go? The other eight can't survive on their own. Well, they were able to get Houston, BYU, Cincinnati, UCF. Now, are those blockbuster expansion moves? No. But did they stabilize the Big 12? Yes. And then when the Pac-12 was breaking apart, the infamous, we tried to... You know that story, Todd, right? About the Apple TV deal?
I vaguely remember it, but...
Okay. It's 11 months ago. They're going through, and everybody kept saying, okay, where's the TV deal? Where's the TV deal? Because they actually had a good TV deal on the table 11 months earlier in September of 2022. And the Pac-12 said no to it because they felt they could do better. That's where the, I think, is it Cal or Stanford? Some professor did a breakdown on value. And they said the Pac-12 was undervaluing their TV presence. And he thought they could get $50 million apiece. And I'm reading this going, who is this guy? Has he ever left the classroom? What's he doing? Like, there's a real world out there. I can write all the papers I want, right? I've done my evaluation. What are you talking about? I read that and go, what are you talking about? Okay? It's what the TV networks value at, not what you think you're valued at. I mean, that's a negotiating point. Notre Dame, I want $75 million a year in the TV deal. You and I both said they'll get between 40 and 50. They got 50. Because you throw a number out there that's high, and then you negotiate, and you come to some middle ground. Okay. Well, they go out there, and they stabilize it with Cincinnati, UCF, Houston, BYU. Well, the Pac-12, the story in the Pac-12 is they're going to get presented with a TV deal, and it turns out to be the Apple TV deal at, I think at $25 million a school. Right? I think the first one was 23. I think they got the $25 million a school. And like, there are several Pac-12 schools that looked around and said, okay, you know, we can live with this. This is all right. We can do this. And it looked like, remember the morning of the vote to accept it or not, there was all this optimism running rampant. They've done it. They've saved it. Right?
I do remember that, yes.
When it came time to vote, Oregon and Washington were not on the call. And the Pac-12 officials repeatedly kept trying to call officials at Oregon and officials at Washington, and none of them would answer the phone. And that's when everybody knew we're dead. They wouldn't answer the phone. They kept calling him. We'll call the athletic director's office. We'll call the president's office. We'll call the provost's office. We'll call the assistant athletic director in charge of whatever's office. Nobody would answer the phone. Because they looked around and said, we can't do this. We got to go to the Big Ten.
That's kind of when you know when any relationship is over, when they stop answering the phone.
Ooh, it sounds like you have experience. Sounds terrible. So now they break apart. Oregon and Washington are going to join USC and UCLA. And Colorado says, we're out. They're the first ones. We're out. We're going to go back to the Big 12. Then Utah, Arizona, and Arizona State follow. Now, Utah, Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado as brands make the Big 12 better. But they are not home run brands. Arizona is a home run basketball brand, and you know how highly I think of Utah. I think Utah's going to win the thing. But they're not, in reality, Texas, Oklahoma, USC, and UCLA. Fair?
Very.
Right. And again, this is what he's operating with. I think he's fortunate he ends up with Arizona, especially in basketball. And your mark, to his credit, values basketball. He ends up with Utah, which has been really good in football. And to be honest with you, they've actually been better than USC in football in recent years. And they've been better than both USC and UCLA in football in recent years. But they don't have the brand power of USC or UCLA. Your mark is going to be aggressive with a couple of areas. Number one, he wants to put advertising patches on the officials' uniforms, which they believe they're allowed to do, and I think they should be allowed to do. It's fine. He wants private equity involved. That is one of those dicey areas to me. That is, yeah, there's the old saying, I want your dollars, but I don't want your 2 cents. Well, private equity, when they invest in something, they want a return. Now, the return they're looking for is financial. And if things are going along okay and private equity believes it could be better, they want to get more involved because their money's on the line. So private equity, while sounding great on the surface, is not the be-all, end-all answer. It's something that you have to be very careful with. You have to be very careful with how you craft the agreement with whatever private equity firm you go with, so you're not ceding power. But he wants to do that. He can't renegotiate his TV deal he already did renegotiate his TV deal and, by the way, probably got the best deal he could possibly get. So that's to his credit. But he is not operating from a position of strength. He's operating from a position of strength compared to the ACC. But he's not operating from a position of strength in terms of the SEC, the Big Ten, and the brands that each one bring to the table. They're all the 15 of the top 18 brands are in those two conferences. And none of them of the top 18 happen to be Big 12 schools.
I don't know which writer it was at the Big 12 meeting, or maybe it was even your Mark, but somebody mentioned, you know, using the private equity money to be the money to pony up to get their name brand, be it Florida State or Clemson, to come. Maybe private equity pays the $80 million to get them to come.
Right. And then what do you expect in return for that? That's something you have to ask. I mean, those are always the questions. What are, and these are always difficult to anticipate, what are the unintended consequences? And let's face it, you try to think of every scenario whenever possible. But to be honest with you, there's always one or two that nobody thought of. Like, oh, we gave you 20 of them. How did we know there's 21 and 22? Yeah. And that is an interesting thought that they could do that. But what would they expect in return from that? And maybe by having them on board, it would enhance their number. But there's only so much TV money out there, Todd.
Yeah. And what happens if they pay that money to get the school in there and then they don't make the semifinals or the finals for a couple of years?
Well, what if you get them in there? Look, Florida State has a chance to win the ACC this year, but Jordan Travis was a big, big reason why they were able to do what they did last year. And they don't have him. It's DJ Uiagalelei, who's good, but he's not great. And as a college quarterback, okay, I don't mean a pro, as a college quarterback, Jordan Travis was really, really good. And that's, to me, something that... you got to sit back and you've got to take a long look at moving forward what you do. I think at some point they have to approve advertising patches on football uniforms. It's just common sense. It's already being done by the pros, and to the pros' credit, it's being done tastefully by the pros. You notice that? I think what the pros have done, whether it's the NHL, Major League Baseball, or the NBA, really for the most part, they've been tastefully done. I mean, the Celtics aren't going out there with their green uniforms and suddenly out of nowhere in the front it just says Fly Emirates.
In bright yellow on the green.
Yeah, could you see that? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the only one that looks a little bit is Love's Truck Stops with the Oklahoma City Thunder because of the yellow heart, but yeah. All right. Great to have you with us on the show today. Brought to you by our good friends from NIL Game Changers. Start your journey today. Business, athlete, they can handle everything. NILGameChangers.org here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
There's something to be said about a sale with a handshake. A service technician who really knows what he's doing. They can explain it in English what the problem is. There's nothing better than having that friend you could trust in the area. That's Sunbury Motors, where you get selection, knowledgeable salespeople, and prices that fit your budget, and more important, that friend you can trust. Welcome to Sunbury Motors, Kia, Ford, and Hyundai. You could chop other dealers and compare prices, but at Sunbury Motors, you get their lowest price promise. They research the current used vehicle market and guarantee their used car prices are the lowest. If you find a lower price, Sunbury Motors will beat it. Three dealers all in one. See their full new and pre-owned inventory at sunburymotors.com. Pick out a vehicle you like and schedule your test drive online. Follow them on Facebook. Sunbury Motors Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
You want a unique way to display your brand. You need a team of seasoned experts to work with. You want to reach customers who buy. You want NIL Game Changers, a versatile consulting agency powered by former student athletes and coaches who work as NIL sports agents. NIL Game Changers will help you build powerful relationships with customers through compelling stories, with student athlete influencers as your leading edge. Finally, we'll equip you with the right media to drive your success home. NILGameChangers.org, building meaningful relationships with your customers.
Something I'm going to get into in the next half hour is that there appears to be a sense that there's unlimited funds for television networks. Really? You want to know what the streaming numbers look like? And I don't mean the streaming numbers like, look how many people stream. No, how much money they're losing. Now, Netflix is making money. Warner Discovery, which is Turner. They also have HBO. Now, they're doing their numbers in such a way where it includes some HBO, HBO Max, things like that. So they turn a slight profit. Everybody else is getting buried.
I was just going to say, they just sold Paramount yesterday.
Well, Paramount lost $1.7 billion last year. Okay, Paramount Plus, $1.7 billion. Gone. Peacock. Oh, look, I mean, he's like, look, there are more subscribers than ever, and blah, 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 blah. They must be making money. How about no? $2.7 billion in the red. When they're putting out stories saying that last year they lost $937 million in the final quarter, and it got better, they only lost $856 million in the final quarter this year. What kind of business model is that?
They had a good business model and thought they could make more money, and they absolutely torched their old business model.
That's right. Amazing, isn't it? But that's my question. Where's the money going to come from? Everybody thinks TV is an endless supply of cash. They do not. Why is it Oregon and Washington got half shares? Because at the moment, that's what Fox could afford.